of the point of detonation, Confederates abandoned their lines. There was thus a quarter-mile-long gap in the Army of Northern Virginia's lines. The mine and the explosion had done exactly what the Pennsylvanians had hoped it would do. It's an amazing success. Now, the plan had been for Burnside to have a fresh division of United States colored troops spearhead the attack. These men had trained specifically to do this. They'd been trained to get the obstructions out of the way, the Confederates' obstructions that would be in front of their lines, and to avoid going into the hole. Don't go down into the hole. Go around the hole, they were told. Establish your line beyond it. Seal the break, and then we'll push in reinforcements and try to extend our advantage to either direction. The last minute, however, there was a change of heart at the Union High Command. Grant and Meade decided the black troops should be used only in a supporting role, and that the three white divisions that originally had been slated to be in a supporting role would have to step up to the front. Now, the three division leaders came in as a group and literally drew straws to see which division would be the first one in after the explosion. An officer named James H. Ledley drew the short straw. His division would lead. Edward Ferraro's black division would now be in support. Well, unfortunately for the Federals, Ledley was drunk back in his bomb-proof at the time the assault began, took no role in the attack, provided no direction for his division, and these white troops who had been fighting ever since the Wilderness, the black troops would have been fresh. These troops had been fighting since the Wilderness. They're not well led. They're exhausted in many instances. They went forward, and they did just exactly what they weren't supposed to do. The black troops had been put in the rear really for two reasons. I think partly because Grant and Meade weren't sure that they could trust them, but also I think it was important to both men that it not be perceived, if something did go wrong, that they had fed black men into a situation where they would be slaughtered. They were more comfortable sending white troops in to be slaughtered. They didn't fear the political consequences quite so much. At any rate, the white troops went in, and they went in sluggishly, and they went right into the crater and just sort of gawked around at it. It must have been an incredible sight, a hole 30 feet deep and that big. More and more Union troops slid down into the crater with virtually no organization and certainly no impetus that was going to take them beyond the Confederate lines. As more and more supports came up, more and more men jammed into the crater, and soon the crater was essentially filled, packed with Northern soldiers. Well, the Confederates reacted fairly quickly. They were led in the main by an officer named William Mahone, who would be a very prominent politician after the war in Virginia. By 8 a.m., Mahone and other Confederate commanders had sealed the break. And then they brought up reinforcements and began to pour fire into the crater, slaughter the milling Federals. By the time the black troops came up, the battle was lost, and they too became part of the mob in the crater. They were funneled into the crater. They didn't really have any way to get beyond it. Confederate soldiers turned their fury on the black soldiers, shot many of them who tried to surrender. Confederates later remembered that the word went up and down the southern lines that there were black soldiers fighting at this area, and soldiers ran from other units to try to have a chance to kill one of the black soldiers. In the end, and it was over by 1 p.m., in the end, the attack had proved to be a complete fiasco. Complete fiasco. Golden opportunity lost. More than 4,000 Federal soldiers were shot down, about 1,500 Confederates. Grant called it the saddest affair I have witnessed in the war. After the Battle of the Crater, there was really no remarkable action on the Petersburg front through the summer and fall of 1864. There was a good deal of fighting and many thousands of casualties, but no dramatic moment such as this. Grant continued to press against the Confederate rail and road links that carried supplies to Lee. He extended his lines to the south and east, and there were sharp actions at the Weldon Railroad on August 18th to the 21st, some Union gains in that battle. In the Battle of Peebles Farm on September 30th, the Federals tried to get control of an important road called the Boyden Plank Road. At Burgess's Mill on October 27th, Winfield Scott Hancock failed to cut the Boyden Plant Road and the Weldon Railroad, fighting at those places and elsewhere as you move through the summer and into the fall.